So thank you, and thank you for the invitation to come visit with you and your customers today. My name is Mark Souza. I'm a general manager for the SQL Server development team back in Redmond, Washington. My role is I manage all the customer experiences out of the engineering organization. So my role is I run all the programs like the early adopter TAP programs. I do all the community work. I'm in charge of all the content, so you can pick on me for that if you don't like the content that comes in the packages. And I also have a team that I send away from Redmond called the SQL Cat team. And their job is to work with you, work with some of the largest, most mission-critical systems in the world. And their real job is to learn from it and make sure that we're building the product that you need and not the one we think you need. So that is my role. And I brought some friends with me today. I'd like to make sure that I introduce them so you know who they are and you can talk to them during the break. Robert Bruckner. Robert, sitting. You can have to stand up, Robert. All right, Robert's from the Reporting Services Engine Group. So during the break, please spend some time with Robert. Lubor Kohler, he's over here. You can't see him across the screen, but he's tall and he's got gray hair. All right, so that means he's been around for a long time. And he's been in the SQL Server Engine team for a very long time, and it's a good person to know as well. Roman, where are you, Roman? There we are. Roman Schindlauer is part of the Stream Insight engineering group. He's also spent time in the engine as well. And then Martin is our local expert, knowing SQL Server and the BI technology. So during the break, they're here for you. So please talk with them. Ask them any questions that you would like. So what are we going to talk about today? We're going to talk about the new information platform. I'm going to introduce you to a concept that we're calling the new world of data. To do that, it starts with a foundation, and that foundation, we believe, is SQL Server 2012. There's a lot of exciting features in that release, and we'll cover as much as we can in the very short time that we have together in the first session. It's not enough just to give you good software. If we truly want to lower your cost, we're introducing you to some pre-configured, pre-tested appliances where you could truly lower your cost of implementation. Plug it in and you're working pre-configured across software, security, management right out the gate versus spending weeks and months doing that yourself. We want to show you, too, that how SQL Server is cloud-ready on your terms. We'll introduce that to you today on your terms. That's not the one I'm saying you have to go to the cloud. We're going to give you the same tools and capabilities to allow you to make the right choice for your environment. And we'll introduce some of those tools to you today. And then the concept of connecting to the world's data. Let me introduce that to you as part of our vision. And let me throw out a couple of statistics that just recently been published. In the last 18 months, more data was created in the previous 25 years before that. A lot of you, the average consumer, has 4.3 devices between your phone and your tablet, your laptop, your music device, your e-reader books. And if you sit there and think about it, you go, oh yeah, I got 3, I got 4, I got 5, I got 6 devices. And each of these devices either consume or produce information, along with social networking, large search sites like Bing and Google and even Apple downloads. Apple alone has hundreds of petabytes of data. So with this new world of data, and each of you having pressure on you to be more agile in your decision-making process within your organizations, they're asking all of you and your companies to be able to respond quicker to competitive threats, to market trends, to economic trends. You need to be able to respond, make decisions much quicker. Well, if you need that, then your computer systems and your data systems need to be agile as well. So one thing you can't do with the new world of data is you don't have the luxury as much to take all that information, a few months, ETL it into a database, whatever that database is, and then start querying against it. You need to be able to get at the data quicker and analyze the data quicker than ever before. So we believe the new world of data means you keep data in its original source, where data is born, and then the vendor that can help you analyze it quickly is the vendor you're going to count on as you move forward in the new agile world. That's the vision around the new world of data. We're going to show you some of that in the next hour and the rest of the day. But it starts with a foundation. We think foundation, SQL Server 2012 is a great foundation. It starts with mission critical. In order to run your mission critical systems in your environment, you obviously need the compliance and the security that you would expect. You need the high availability, disaster recovery, and you need the perfect scale. And we'll introduce you some great features in 2012 to help you with the mission critical confidence that you need to run your most mission critical applications. Breakthrough insight. Each year, each version, we introduce something, stepping up self-service. We introduced self-service with BI in SQL Server 2008 R2, and we're extending that now to reporting and allowing analytics across different data platforms. And we'll show some of that to you today. And then, again, I just introduced cloud on your terms. You'll see how using the same code base, using the same set of management tools that you're familiar with today, we're going to make it easy for you to make the choice that makes sense for you. All right? Not forcing everybody to do one thing, but giving you the choice. And you'll see that today. So 2012, there it is. Few features that we can talk about today. And if you got 2 days, I could probably get through all these features. But we only have about 45 minutes or so. So I guess we're going to have to just cover the highlights. And throughout the day, if there's anything that's of interest to you, stop one of the Microsoft folks and ask us about it. We'll be happy to chat with you about it. So I have 3 children. And if you ask me which of my children is my favorite, you know, as parents, you don't have favorites. But when it comes to SQL Server, I think I'm allowed favorites. So I'm going to introduce to you some of my favorites. We'll call them the Fantastic 12 of SQL Server 2012. And I cheated, don't tell anybody. Some of them are themes where I get to put a couple features in there, so I actually get to talk about a little bit more than just 12. And even that, I'll have to pick and choose between these 12. So let's go through a few of them. It starts with probably the most critical, biggest feature we released in SQL Server 2012, something we call Always On. What we did here is we took the clustering technology and the database mirroring technology, and we integrated it. We integrated it, and the first step we did is we made it easy to implement. So no longer do you have 4 or 5 technologies, clustering, replication, log shipping, database mirroring, and you have to turn around and choose which implementation you want, all right? Do whatever combination makes sense for yourselves, install them all separately. You now think in terms of things like recovery point interval. I want no data loss. Of course, we all want no data loss, all right? Or I want to recover in X amount of time. Some people it's 5 minutes, some people it's 5 seconds, some people it's no time at all. You get to choose and discuss and make choices like that. And what we are going to do is we're going to make it really easy for you to set up automatically. And behind the scenes, we'll install the software and configure it for you. Okay, thank you. We also made it easy for you to say things like, I want local recovery right away. And I want disaster recovery. You can also say, I want to take a copy of my data, and I want to put it in the geographic location that's 10 miles away and allow them to do reporting on it, and take another copy and put it in another location. So yes, we're introducing multiple copies of your data that we couldn't do previously. And you get to read those multiple copies. It even gets better. You get to actually do maintenance against those backup copies as well, backups and DBCC checks and things like that. And by allowing you to do that, you're offloading cycles for your main application. So immediately, just this feature alone is giving people the return on investment to implement SQL Server 2012 out the door. So that's one of the biggest releases. And another thing I'm happy about is, if you ever failed over clustering and wasn't sure why, all right, because it was hard to capture. Go back and capture that information. It can't be done, it was difficult. Now proactively, we're capturing information about your system over time. So you can watch your healthier system over time. Watch it as you might see CPU going up, or memory pressure, or any type of latches. You can watch it, and maybe you can even fix it before it fails. This is the type of thing we're implementing with Always On. So my next big theme or feature is blazing fast performance. We all want blazing fast performance. So we're introducing a feature called Column Store. So if you're not familiar with what a column store is, think of data and tables and pages. And pages, you know, there's rows of data. We're all familiar with the row of a data. And if you want to go after a fact table, and you want to say, between this date and this date, you go into that, you know, retrieve data out of that page, and you bring back the whole row, all the columns, and you check the date. That's typical relational database. But when you have a column store, which is just an index that you create, if you have a column store, now you can, its data is stored, just the columns are in that page. So just date is in that page or set of pages. And if it's this date, think of the increased compression that you can do. So we have more compression. That means when you read more data and with a shorter amount of reads. All right. And if you want to filter on a date or you want to filter on sales order, you're only looking at that column versus all the columns. So you're seeing typical data warehouse type queries going 20x to 100x faster utilizing this column store technology. And we're happy to introduce that. And Lubo Kola will be talking more about that in one of his sessions today. He'll even demonstrate it and let you guess how fast it's going to run. So I alluded to self-service BI. And again, SQL Server 2008 R2, we introduced the concept of self-service BI. Whereas IT folks, it was always under our scrutiny to create the cubes. We did it. We hoped the requirements came from the users were correct, and we created the cubes we thought they needed, and we handed it to our analysts and our end users, and they did reporting against it. Took time, took resources. So self-service BI and Power Pivot in particular, the first time that end users got to, at least the ones that are data aware, got to create their own. And as IT folks, we could still, utilizing SharePoint, put security contexts on it, avoided it from being spread all over my environment where people start passing around Excel spreadsheets everywhere. And we got to utilize our own capability to back it up and things like that as well. So it was the control, the power, the important part of the IT organization combined with the self-service of the end user, giving us flexibility, agility, and maintaining the control that we think we needed. Now we extend the same capability into reporting. And Robert Bruckner is from the reporting group. He's going to spend a whole session just talking about this. And this is one of the exciting features where very easily you can do interactive reporting. And I can talk about it, but I want to give you a little taste of it. So I'm going to invite Martin up to come on up and just give a little showcase of this technology.
Okay, thank you, Mark, for the introduction. I'm switching back to German, if you don't mind, for the demo. Was wir uns jetzt anschauen, ist PowerView, dem einen oder anderen vielleicht bekannt unter Project Crescent. Das war sozusagen der Codenamen. Das ist eine interaktive Möglichkeit, komplett webbasierend Berichte zu erstellen, beziehungsweise in den Daten zu analysieren, Daten zu visualisieren. Das heißt, PowerView zeichnet auf der einen Seite aus eben komplett webbasierend. Man sieht, wir sind hier also komplett in unserem Webbrowser drinnen. Auf der rechten Seite haben wir unser Datenmodell. Auch da werden wir dann vom Robert etwas mehr hören, was sich hinter diesem Datenmodell verbirgt. Es sei etwas vorweggenommen, da verbirgt sich in Wirklichkeit ein BI-Semantic Model sozusagen unter der Haube aus dem SQL Server. Und was wir hier machen, ist ganz einfach. Wir wollen uns im Prinzip, wir haben hier eine Movie-Datenbank. Wir wollen uns hier einfach ein paar Eckdaten anschauen. Das heißt, das Erste, was ich mache, ich klicke einfach hier in meinem Modell auf meine Filme und bekomme sozusagen schon sinnvoll formatiert recht eine schöne Information im Moment einmal in Tabellenform. Das können wir auch entsprechend umformatieren auf eine andere Sichtweise. Und genau da sieht man schon einmal die erste Stärke von PowerView. Es ist erstens einmal ein What you see is what you get. Das heißt, während ich bearbeite, den Bericht oder den, sozusagen die Ansicht erstelle, sehe ich sozusagen, arbeite ich wirklich mit den Live-Daten aus dem Modell. Und das Zweite ist, das, was PowerView wirklich extrem mächtig macht, PowerView lebt sozusagen von den Metadaten und arbeitet extrem stark mit den Metadaten. Das heißt, formatiert Werte schon sinnvoll, es sind Werte ausgeblendet, die vielleicht nicht interessant sind. Wir sehen hier zum Beispiel ein Bild, das heißt, aus dem Modell heraus erkennt PowerView, das ist ein Bild, das kann ich zum Beispiel als Bild darstellen. Und das macht natürlich das Arbeiten extrem spannend und extrem schnell. Besonders spannend natürlich für End-User, die nicht unbedingt geübt sind in irgendwelche aufwendigen Erstellungen von Standard-Reports mit Reporting-Tools. So, jetzt haben wir mal eine Liste unserer Filme. Was wir noch anzeigen wollen, ist beispielsweise einfach unsere Umsatzzahlen. Das heißt, ich blende hier noch ein, zum Beispiel gruppiert über das Genre meiner Filme, möchte ich hier noch entsprechende Umsatzzahlen darstellen und das Ganze formatieren wir um in eine entsprechende Grafik. Hoppla, daneben machen wir es ein bisschen größer noch. So, also man sieht, mit wenigen Klicks habe ich also da bereits recht schöne und sinnvolle Grafiken und immer alles auf den Live-Daten. Das geht in dieser Art Tonart sozusagen weiter. Wir wollen das Ganze hier unten noch über die Kategorie zum Beispiel dargestellt haben und wollen uns hier zum Beispiel den Umsatz Year-to-Date anschauen. Auch das formatiere ich erstmals um. Was wir hier auch sehr spannende Möglichkeiten haben, sind einfach unterschiedliche Visualisierungsmöglichkeiten. Das ist neben den klassischen Dingen, die man hier oben auch in der Menüzeile sieht, Liniengrafiken, Barcharts und so weiter und so fort, gibt es auch die sogenannten Scattercharts. Das sind im Prinzip Blasengrafiken, die den Sinn haben, einfach wenn man mehr als nur einen Wert sozusagen miteinander vergleichen will und das sozusagen auf einem zweidimensionalen Feld. Und dafür eignen sich diese Grafiken also perfekt. Das heißt, ich habe hier jetzt einfach mal den Umsatz dargestellt. Ich möchte aber auch noch, um wirklich einen Schluss ziehen können, welche Filme sind eigentlich wirklich erfolgreich. Ja, das ist sozusagen das, was ich eigentlich rausfinden will. Da kann zum Beispiel sein, okay, welcher Film wird zum Beispiel wirklich oft runtergeladen und wie viele Titel zum Beispiel habe ich einfach in diesen Filmen. Ja, und man sieht, dann bekomme ich schon eine recht interessante Grafik. Das heißt im Prinzip, wie man sich das einfach vorstellen kann, die Filme, die sozusagen ziemlich weit rechts oben sind, die sind eigentlich die erfolgreichen Filme, die machen also viel Umsatz, die werden oft heruntergeladen und wenn ich dann eigentlich noch eine relativ kleine Kugel habe, dann erziele ich eigentlich diesen Erfolg sogar mit relativ wenig Titeln, die ich sozusagen in diesem Genre habe. Ja. Also das ist eigentlich eine sehr mächtige und einfache Möglichkeit hier, Informationen sehr schnell rauszubekommen. Zusätzlich kann ich das Ganze auch noch mit einer Zeitdimension ausstatten, das heißt, ich kann im Prinzip sagen, okay, ich möchte mir diese Information auch über eine gewisse Zeitdauer anschauen. Was ich dazu mache, ich bleibe in dieser Grafik und klicke einfach zum Beispiel Monat an. Und was jetzt passiert, ich bekomme im Prinzip eine auch entsprechende Zeitschiene noch in diese Information dazu und ich kann mir dann auch noch den Zeitverlauf über einen entsprechenden Zeitpunkt anschauen. Aber dazu mehr dann auch noch von Robert. Was ich jetzt noch zum Abschluss machen möchte, ist das noch mit entsprechender Information, mit entsprechender Geoinformation anreichern. Das heißt, auch das ist etwas, was ich in unserem Modell drinnen habe. Dazu wandle ich als erstes einmal diese Sichtweise um von meiner in sogenannte Tiles. Das heißt, es ist nichts anderes als im Prinzip Registerkarten, entsprechende andere Sichtweise, dass ich da etwas Platz habe noch unterhalb. Und was ich jetzt darstellen möchte, ist sozusagen der Umsatz zu diesen jeweiligen Filmen, wie teilt sich der auf meine Vertriebsregionen beispielsweise auf. Und dazu habe ich in meinem Modell die Region mit einem entsprechenden Namen, entsprechender Karte. Und dazu blenden wir uns zum Beispiel auch noch Umsatzzahlen ein. Ja? Und genau da sieht man jetzt wirklich die Mächtigkeit von PowerView. Auch hier erkennt er sozusagen aus den Metadaten heraus, das ist eine, machen wir vielleicht Fullscreen, dann sieht man etwas mehr. So. Das sind Geoinformationen, die sind ja standardisiert, das sind standardisierte Datentypen in SQL Server. Und er tragt sozusagen diese Geoinformationen, die sind im Wesentlichen Längen, Breiten, gerade Polygone zum Beispiel, tragt automatisch auf eine Karte auf. Ja? Also ohne, dass ich jetzt irgendwas programmiert hätte oder ohne, dass ich irgendwas im Untergrund konfiguriert hätte, vollkommen automatisch. Ja, das war sozusagen einmal ein erster Einblick in PowerView. In der nächsten folgenden Session von Robert geht es ein bisschen in die Tiefe, der zeigt uns sozusagen, was man noch mehr mit dem Ding machen kann. And with that, I'm switching back to Mark.
So you can see that was pretty easy to build multiple interactive reports within the same report. When they promoted me to general manager, they automatically go into my brain and take all technical capabilities away from me. And I think I can even do that. So that is a testimony to some great work by Robert and his team. And my boss, who is even less technical because he's now vice president of SQL Server, He might be afraid to press those buttons, so Robert will show you how you can take the multiple views and you can actually export it all into PowerPoint, and I can send it to my boss to view in PowerPoint because he's much more comfortable with PowerPoint. And even in PowerPoint, you'll see there's interactive capabilities between the reports. So even these multiple reports right within PowerPoint, same interactive capabilities that you have within the tool itself. So there's some really, really cool stuff in there. And you know, we carried over the business model that we actually use in the AS side of the business, Power Pivot, so you could actually utilize it between the two, the schema between the two, which makes it even much easier. So we've been asked quite a bit on the licensing side that it's too complex. We got data center and we got work group and we got all kinds of different licensing. And a lot of folks just wanted BI. I just wanted to do BI and just wanted to purchase BI. So we are introducing a new licensing model. It's going to be very simple. We have three editions. We're going to have the enterprise edition, no longer data center, with all the enterprise features that you wanted. We're going to have the standard edition with the standard, with all the features you expect in the standard edition. And we are introducing to you today or last week a new business intelligence only edition. And if you want to know what it means to you, Georg was nice enough to give me pictures and names of all the local Microsoft folks who actually cover you, and they can come in and talk to you about what it actually means exactly to you. So part of the next step of Mission Critical, besides the security, besides the availability, reliability, is the actual credibility of the data, the quality of the data. And the study by Aberdeen Group here shows that the higher quality, the more efficient the average employee is on a weekly basis. And it makes sense. You start talking about information with employees and it's not accurate. Well, it takes resources to figure out if it's accurate. It takes discussions to figure out if it's accurate. And that takes time. So the higher the quality, the more efficient the average employee is in your location. So we are introducing data quality services, which is a service that we're providing with SQL Server 2012, where you'll be able to take your data and send it through this service and allow us to do quality checking like, hey, is Mark Souza equivalent to M. Souza? And Mark Souza's address is 22 Brockett Road. Is that the same as 22 Brockett RD? And quality checks like that. It's extensible. You'll be able to add your own data services to this as well to expand it and to make it even richer. Master data management, we introduced version 1 in our last release, and it was a version 1. And the biggest request we got was, hey, it's kind of a little hard to manage. Can you just put it all in Excel and let me manage it from Excel? And yes, we implemented the Excel feature for master data management as well in this release. As I talked about before, it's not enough just to do great software. If we can go a step further and have it pre-configured, pre-tested, integrated between security of, say, SharePoint and SQL Server, all right, the right firmware, the right BIOS, all done, so all you have to do is plug in and get started, we save you enough time and reduce your cost. We believe that's true. So we're introducing a set of appliances from Microsoft and our partners. And we've already had the Parallel Data Warehouse appliance, which is a large multi-terabyte, typically tens to hundreds of terabyte data warehouse solution. We have that running on HP now for over a year. We're actually introducing one from Dell as well to give you choice there. We have the Data Warehouse appliance. It's already been in the market. Again, this is probably more for the 5 to 10 terabyte range, all right, where we have a pre-configured reference architecture for your I/O subsystem where you can get maximized I/O already pre-configured. Again, avoiding you have to do BIOS and firmware and configuration work. It's already pre-configured ahead of time. We give all those specifications to you. We also have the HP Business Decision Appliance. This one is a pre-configured ecosystem for business intelligence. That means SharePoint and SQL Server and Excel, all configured with the security context of management and things that you would expect. And that's not an easy task. And if you set those environments up, they can be tricky. So it's nice to have them pre-configured on hardware and optimized. And now we're recently introducing the database consolidation appliance. We'll talk about this, how this become a private cloud for you, where you'll be able to take multiple workloads and put it into a virtualized pre-configured environment. Again, with management all built in, all configured for the hardware and performance. So my next fantastic 12 of 2012 feature is extend to any data, anytime, anywhere, and access to that data. And we know it's not all in SQL Server or not all in relational databases. So we are introducing interoperability between PHP, Java, Hadoop, all the other sources of data that you may have or data may exist in. So we are announcing ODBC drivers for Linux. And we are announcing change data capture for Oracle, because a lot of you have Oracle and SQL Server. And this will allow you to interchange more efficiently. And we've been asked about this for some time now. In the area of beyond relational, we introduced in SQL Server 2005 XML, XML query, full text search. Some good capabilities to go after unstructured data. Well, now we're stepping that up to the next level. File table is a pretty cool technology where you'll be able to manage files. We all have files. You always have to make that choice. Do I put it in the database? And I get the advantages of the database backup, database indexing, database query. Or do I put it in the file system where I'm more used to files and file management? Now you have both. You actually have the data in files, and you look in your C drive or your D drive, and there are the files, and you can manage them from Windows. And the same files are controlled from SQL Server, exploiting the features of backing it up and indexing it, things like that. So file table is a new feature that we're introducing. Semantic search is taking full text search to the next level as well. Full text search is good. It allows you to go into your search in your files and grab keys for fast access. But semantic search goes to the next level. It understands behavior between objects. So there's much more intelligence built into the keying and the structure and understanding your data. And it's going to give you a better experience for accessing unstructured data. So that's a lot of features with SQL Server 2012. And hearing them from a general manager is one thing. But hearing a real story right from here from Vienna is even better. So I'm going to invite my friend Rick to come on up here and talk a little bit about the work he's done at BWIN. Rick, welcome. Thank you. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do at BWIN and your environment, please?
Sure. I'll try.
Oh, that's right. We forgot about that mic. You have to step up here and speak nice and loud for everybody.
Thank you. Yeah, makes it a lot easier, and maybe I'll have a voice when I'm finished. Okay, so I'm Rick Kutscher. I'm running the database engineering department for BWIN, which has one of the largest databases on SQL Server. Mark already told you much about the features that SQL Server 2012 has. Well, I can say I tried most of them, pretty much all of them, and most of them are even better than Mark dares to tell you. So Mark already said things about the always-on availability groups. We use this pretty extensively already. Things like multiple mirroring and backup from secondaries, which gets us a huge offload of I/O from the primary server. And also, in the past, you were bound to have the secondaries, your cluster passive node, as a hardware that was just sitting there doing nothing. Now you have readable mirrors. You can offload the read-only connections to your secondaries, which is something that pretty much boosts the performance and pretty much boosts the investment for you. And we are doing this on some like scale-out.
Everybody can see you.
doing this on some kind of scale-out scenarios sometimes. So it's a pretty good step forward. Mark also told a little bit about things like the column store index. And he said you can get up to 100 times faster. Well, we tried it. We have a report that took 70 minutes before. It's taking 3 seconds now. And we haven't even changed the report. We just put a column store index on the table, and that's it. So it's a pretty cool feature.
That sounds like more than 100 times.
Yeah, it's 99.7% improvement, I think. So we're close to 1,000 times already.
So in your environment, you have high availability is important to you. So can you talk to us a little bit about your high availability environment? Do you have synchronous? Do you have do you use mirroring today? And what are you going to use when you move forward to 2012?
We have been using mirroring before, synchronous mirroring, because zero data loss is something that we always need and is always important for us. We never use clustering because it's just too slow. So right now we're switching to always-on availability groups, having multiple mirrors, even improving our availability using a mixture of sync and async mirrors across the way. So we can step it up one step further, get our availability up to 99.9 and even more.
Right. And how about performance and transaction volume? You have a lot of high-volume transactions in your environment, so you mirror hundreds of thousands of SQL statements?
Yeah, it's more than that, actually. We're going in the million SQL statements per second now. And I have to tell you, it's awesome. Because we all know, if you build in high availability into a system, you get a dent on performance. And we saw with SQL mirroring and clustering, dents like 20% down due to the mirroring traffic and overhead. We tried it with Hadron, the always-on availability groups. The code name was Hadron. And we just see 2 to 3% performance drop, even if you use multiple mirrors now. So it's pretty much a zero solution. Everything works at the same performance.
And speaking of performance, you talked about performance number. You came into our lab, and you got some pretty good numbers, didn't you?
Yeah. Before, we had some little problems with scaling up linearly to a certain point, and then it just dropped off. With some new development features in SQL 2012, like sequences, we managed to get past this point and past this limitations, and we are now scaling to heights that are pretty amazing, coming up with pretty high numbers, I think.
So those are just words. So you were in Redmond, and we did a little screen capture. We'll show everybody to show that this is actually real. And if I could scroll to the top. And let's go to the right. 195,000 batch requests per second. And each batch has multiple SQL statements.
Yes, each batch has about 200 to 300 SQL statements in there with several transactions through the batches. And we're scaling pretty linearly up to this.
So millions of SQL statements per second. I'd say SQL Server can scale.
Yeah, it can. And this is not even some high-performance super hardware. This is a commodity Fujitsu server that you can buy off the rack. So this is pretty awesome.
Well, Rick, thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate it. All right. Thank you, Rick. Good job. So my team runs working with early adopters of technology like Rick and B-Win. And we actually have 40 external customers in production right now with SQL Server 2012. And it's scheduled publicly to come out in the first half of next year. But I'll tell you right now, as a person who signs off on quality on behalf of customers, it's looking very, very good. We have a hospital running, a hospital patient record data running on SQL Server 2012, the new high availability features in production right now. This is not mission critical, this is life critical. And that's in production right now. We have our SAP system at Microsoft, which is the core of our business, and that's running in production off SQL Server 2012 right now. So I am very, very pleased as one of the people who signed off on quality that this is an excellent, excellent release. So that was pretty quick to go through some of the features, and I didn't even get into auditing capabilities, enhanced auditing capabilities, and extensions to auditing, and new mission-critical support capabilities, and so much more. But we'll be around today for the rest of the day and in between breaks available to talk with you in more detail about that. But I want to take it to the next level, because just great features of 2012 is not enough to run the new world of data. And we truly believe that this is a foundation, and I want to get into a little bit more what it means to be cloud on your terms. And there's features in this release. And it starts with features that we started showing you already, the scale, or the limited scale, where customers like the Transportation Authority of London, they actually just took the train schedules for the tube, and they put it in the cloud. And they didn't know how many users were going to use the app. It's a phone app. So when people leave the office, they take the phone app and they're looking for the tube schedule and they see green, red. If there's delays, they just take a different tube. Sounds like a very convenient little app. Well, they didn't know how big of a hardware to buy because I don't know how many users are going to use the system. So they put it in the cloud and they just scaled it out across multiple nodes. The first week, there's about 2,500. Week three, 3 million. It's hard to, you don't always know that. What size machine do you buy? So the cloud in that case gave them a significant advantage to be able to grow as the demand of the business grows. But it goes beyond that. In your environment, it starts with the server, the set of servers, the on-premise servers, like SQL Server 2012. And as you can see, we're providing that to you today where you can continue with that experience. Or if it makes sense to you, maybe you move to a private cloud solution, and Lupo Cole is going to drill into this a little bit more, using that appliance that we alluded to. And that appliance has scale in it, where you can start with a half rack and go up to a full rack, all right, which is hundreds and hundreds of virtual machines where you can take your environment and consolidate and lower your cost of management. Or you can add racks to each other, providing yourself a true private cloud experience right in your own data center. Or it may make sense, like the Transportation Authority for London, to put some things in the cloud. All right. Well, one thing I was going to show you today, but part of that technical brain thing they took out of me when I became general manager, I was going to show you a new tool that you'll be seeing from Microsoft that actually will, right from SQL Server Management Studio, the same Management Studio that you're familiar with, you'll have SQL Server on-premise or cloud SQL Server databases, which, by the way, same code base, not different code bases. It's the cloud will be running SQL Server 2012 as well. Same set of tools, SQL Server Management Studio. I can turn around and just right-click and under task, take an on-premise SQL Server, and I can just port it to the cloud. Takes about a couple minutes to move the schema, depending on how much data, maybe a couple minutes more. And no work by you, I can actually move that database application to cloud automatically. These are the tools I'm talking about where you get to go to the cloud on your terms. Does it make sense to take this small database application that I'm maintaining, I'm updating, I'm applying service packs to, all right, I'm the guy backing it up, move it to cloud and let it be automatically managed, automatically updated for me, copies already made for me. May make sense for you, may not make sense for you. We're providing the tools for you to go to the cloud on your terms. Or you may decide to do a hybrid application where some of it remains on-premise and some of it goes into the cloud as well. So I alluded to private cloud. And just to give you just a little bit more information about the private cloud, again, it gives you in your environment, right, in your data center, you roll in a pre-configured appliance. Again, you start small, maybe with a half rack, and then you can move up to a full rack, and then you can start stacking the racks up to 10 racks together. Give it unlimited support, built-in high availability, all pre-configured. Some other interesting technical highlights. 60,000 IOPS per second sustained, pre-tested, pre-configured, guaranteed, out the box. You can see the size, 400 hard drives, 58 terabytes of storage, between 200 and 400 database instances across 8 servers and 192 cores. This is what you get in this box. And if you could actually see one, actually we cleaned up the wiring. It's actually a pretty nice job the team did putting that together, working with our friends from HP. On the public side, what we call Azure, we are announcing a few things today. By the end of this year, calendar year, you'll get something called SQL Azure Federations. So what is a federation? Federation is a scale-out. I take my database system, I scale it out. I take my application, I scale it out. This is something Microsoft has done for years. This is how Microsoft's been running its business. Hotmail is 18,000 Windows SQL servers. Bing, MSN, this is how we've always run our business. So we know how to do this. So when we move to the cloud for Microsoft, it's very natural. We do how we run our business, that's how we run our cloud. It's not the same for all the vendors. All right? So mastery skill, commodity-based scaling is something we're very, very familiar with. We run a business off it. Azure Federations are giving you the tools to help you take your app and actually easily distribute it across multiple nodes, giving you truly the unlimited scale up to thousands of nodes. A good story would be the New Zealand Post. They took a very simple application, about 7 lines of code. All they want to do is a zip code lookup to get an address, get a zip code. Very simple application, all right, but they actually only had it on one node. And again, they didn't know how many people would use the application. It overtook the one node. Now, they can turn around and try to add more hardware, but it's going to happen again. By using federations across servers, they got rid of that problem permanently because now they can scale up to unlimited use in that environment. So that's a good example of Azure Federations. Those tools are coming. New management experience. I alluded to the example of, again, SQL Server Management Studio. Right-click, and I can port an app. We actually implemented some new very easy-to-use features on the web to manage all your servers, watch a healthier servers graphically, and you can see proactively that a server might be filling up, and on the spot, in real time, not taking your servers down, see if you can do this in your environment, I can turn around and add space to a server. I can add CPU. I can move databases. All of this real-time online because we keep 3 copies of every database. These are things that we learned over time running our business off this type of technology. Database size today is 50 gigabytes. That is now changing to 150 gig. Some of you are probably thinking right now, 150 gig? I got databases bigger than that. What am I going to do? Well, this is 150 gig, not including federation. It's not 150 gig for your application. This is 150 gig per database. Each one could be federated out across hundreds of servers. So actually, you could have an application with hundreds of terabytes if you desire, as you take 150 gig and you federate it across hundreds of servers. Roman's here to talk about, if you want to talk with him about Stream Insight, which is a service that we're providing in the cloud to allow you to do high throughput event processing management, all in memory, all very, very fast. It's even before you even get into a database. It's a really cool technology. And if you think about the new world of web analytics and all the events that are coming off devices, this type of technology, which is just a service, you can take it and you can interact it with your own application, you'll see some great advantages and make it easier to develop to and fast performance. And that's all coming by the end of the year. And available today, CTP stands for Community Technology Preview. It's like a beta early feature. We've had Azure Reporting now in the cloud, where you can store your reports, share it among folks, in SQL Azure Data Sync. So this is a feature that people have asked for some time, where I can actually synchronize my on-premise with cloud. I can synchronize my on-premise with on-premise, 2 different data centers. I can synchronize my data center with somebody else's data center. It's just a set of tools to allow you to synchronize data between different data centers. And we just released that last week, maybe the week before that. We haven't really announced it yet. We've already had thousands of downloads. So it is a feature that people are excited about. Now, this is the part where I hid my slide where I'm supposed to go in and show you the Azure tools. But I told you that technical thing got taken out of my head, and we couldn't connect to the server this morning. Somebody didn't give me the SA password. Probably smart move on their part, but I didn't have access to the system. We'll skip the Azure demo, and maybe if I get a hold of somebody, I can show it to you later. So there's SQL Server 2012, and then there's cloud on your terms. So those are the two things I introduced to you so far. And hopefully you saw that it's truly cloud on your terms and not Microsoft forcing you to move things to the cloud, or Oracle, or IBM, or Amazon, you know, saying it's cloud, public cloud or nothing. It's not about that. It's about what makes sense for you. Do I take my small applications and let somebody else manage it to lower my cost? Do I go to hybrid? Or do I take advantage of the Elastic Scale, the examples that I gave you? But again, it's more than that. I referred to, in the beginning, the new world of data being petabytes and petabytes of information. And it's there. It's out there today. And how do we analyze petabytes of information? One way is, there's a lot of people out there using technology called Hadoop. Anybody who's familiar with Hadoop? Anybody? A couple people? All right, so basically Hadoop is open source technology from Apache. And what it is just unstructured data across thousands of nodes. And this technology called MapReduce, which is takes query-like features and goes across those thousands of nodes and retrieves the data you want and brings it back together. And this is very popular open source technology. Google uses it. Many folks use this to go after petabytes and petabytes of information. And there's something called Hive on top of that, which is like a data warehouse framework, which makes it a little bit easy. Given lots of this data, a data warehouse framework type experience. So what we did at Microsoft, we said, all right, we can go build this ourselves, or we can utilize technology that's being used in the industry today. And that's what we decided to do. So some people are surprised to hear that we are introducing a technology we're going to endorse, embrace, and extend the capabilities of Hadoop and interact it with the capabilities of business intelligence from Microsoft and SQL Server as well. So we're introducing this same open source Apache Hadoop on Windows, optimized for Windows and Windows Azure. It's the same open source code. And we're creating and delivering an ODBC driver for this Hive, where you can go after that data warehouse experience. And if it's an ODBC driver, you can use the same set of tools you use today that goes after SQL Server or Oracle, and you can go after putting data in or taking data out from this open source Hadoop system. That means we're going to add it in Excel. So in Excel today, you can do a drop-down ODBC, and you can go to SQL Server or Oracle. Now you can go to Hadoop as well. So you can start seeing the interaction, one set of analytical tools accessing data anywhere. We created JavaScript just to make the programming capability even easier against Hadoop. And we took our big data relational solution, Parallel Data Warehouse, and the big data open source, and we provided connectivity where you can move data in and out of either source. A lot of flexibility here to access data to build loud systems. So let's see if I have the capability. Let me see if I can actually show you a real Hadoop system interacting in unique ways where you can go after utilizing Microsoft technology. So being a general manager, that means I'm old and I have to wear glasses, so let me do that. And let's take a look. Well, first of all, let me actually show you. Oh, okay, so there's a couple slides missing here, but I will show you that. A typical web log, if you've never seen a web log before, I'm going to give you an experience. An experience is real. It's called MSN. It's our MSN site. And what we do in MSN is web logs, and the web logs has information about the users. Things like where you're from, what language you're using. And the more we understand about the experience, the more we can customize that experience for you, the user of MSN. Very typical, all major websites do this. It's not personal information. It's understanding who you are, what your preferences are, and I can automatically put your preferences so your experience is better on this website. And there's thousands and thousands and thousands of web log events per person, per node, creating petabytes of data. So typical web log is unstructured data. It's, 140, 180 characters of unstructured data, and there's some key value pairs in there. Little things like a GUID, or little things like a language or a country code. All right? And what people do is they go after, put all that petabytes of data in some place like Hadoop store. They go after it in parallel, retrieve it, analyze it. That's how I understand it. That's how I can customize MSN for you. That's what I'm going to show you right now. Okay? So there's a very simple command from Hive, HiveQL. It's like a query language, kind of SQL-like. It goes out and gets language, goes gets country code, and goes gets who you are and the GUID, all right, against thousands of servers. And this command right here, this Hive command right here, Hive-F, is basically a batch job that does that. Goes out, submits it, MapReduce to 1,000 nodes. All right? And this is going to go against Hadoop running on Windows. And it's going to go out there and run against that. Now, I'm obviously running on a laptop and not getting thousands of servers right now. But it is going to take a while to go out and get all that information. So since it is a demo, I'm going to show you what the results actually look like while this is running. And I am going to go over to in Hadoop file system. So if people are familiar with Hadoop, this is what it looks like. And I'm going to actually drill in to the file system. Go to my Hive directory. And log analysis. And this is the result of that Hive query. All right, 309 files. This is called a Hive table with 309 files. I went out and extracted from petabytes, billions of records, into all these files, and I have all the information I need. What am I going to do with this information? Typically, I now have to download these files, write some programs, go against it, and get all the information back. But this is where the strength comes in. I'm going to go over to something very familiar to all of you, Excel. In Excel, I got Power Pivot, and in Power Pivot, I got a data source, very typical data source wizard that most of us are familiar with. And from this data source wizard, I'm now going to create a connection. I'm going to go to my ODBC OLADB. I am going to build and go after my provider. And my provider is this local Hive server ODBC driver that I talked about that we're announcing from Microsoft. So I am going to choose my local Hive server, test my connection, go cross my fingers, and that worked. Say okay. And then I can either select from my Hive tables that automatically come up, or I can write a query right here. This is a typical Hive query. I'm going to select the tables automatically, and it's going to show me that log analysis table that I talked about, that Hive table with all those files. And if I choose that, say finish, it's going to actually go after those 309 files and go after it and extract that information and bring it into Excel. Now I'm in an environment that I'm used to, Excel that goes against SQL Server, Excel that goes against Oracle, Excel that goes against Teradata. It's the same Excel now that goes against unstructured data from Hadoop, all integrated. I got 259,000, oops, put my glasses on, 252,000 rows back. And there they are. And just like Excel, a few clicks, I can make it into a chart, etc. And being a demo, I just happen to have that chart already made. So we are back, and I'm loud. And okay, so I took that same Excel with all the data, a few clicks. Somebody smarter than me made a few clicks, and they came up with this data. And what it's showing you here from that MSN data, country, language, all right, we find out that Portuguese is one of the more popular languages for MSN users. And I happen to be Portuguese, so I think that's a good idea. And I'm interested, so I'm clicking around in here, and I find that, all right, in the Falkland Islands, if you don't know where the Falkland Islands are, they're by Argentina and South America. And if I click on the Falkland Islands, it's even more interesting because isn't Argentina, isn't that like Spanish down there? but English and Portuguese are the most popular languages. That's interesting. I might want to analyze why. So one thing I can do, I can go back to my Hadoop file system. I can do a reverse IP analysis to find out where these folks came from. That sounds like a good idea, but that means I got to go back to my Hadoop file system again, and I have to rerun all those queries again. But fortunately for you, it's a demo, and I already did that. So let's go take a look. What I actually did, there's a calendaring feature in SharePoint that already exists today where you could run batch jobs. So we ran this batch job. You can see we ran it a week ago, and it took about an hour to run. This is real. This is live. It took about an hour to run, and we retrieved all that data from Hadoop. And when we analyzed that data, we found out by doing reverse IP analysis that actually those folks down the Falkland Islands are actually from Brazil, and in Brazil they speak Portuguese. So that's just an example, not the most exciting example, but it's an example of going after unstructured data using the tools and analytical tools that you're familiar with, Excel, to do that processing. This is my definition of the new world of data. Leave the data at its source, where it's born, and provide analytical capabilities to go after that data very easily and very quickly. All right. So what you saw today in my first hour, and we'll be here for the rest of the day to chat with you more, what you saw was the foundation, SQL Server 2012. Just a little bit of it, just enough of it to show you some of the cool features, and there's lots of really cool features and lots of features in that product. It's a solid foundation. It's a solid on-premise release, but also gives you capabilities to go to the cloud if it makes sense for you on your terms. Then we introduce the concept of petabytes of data that's out there, that we know is out there, and there's tools and technologies already in place in the system, and Microsoft's embracing it. We're embracing it and providing analytical capabilities that you're familiar with to allow you to go access that data. So with that said, I will be around the rest of the day. I look forward to meeting many of you and chatting with most of you today. And I'll turn it back to you, Georg, to tell us what's going on. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mark. I think we can give him a hand.